Hello, and welcome to the ADHD Manual Podcast. My name is Abby Chow. I'm a marriage and family therapist, an ADHD certified clinical services provider, and a proud ADHDer. This is a podcast for people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and those who love us, which covers pretty much everybody. Growing up with a colorful brain in a black and white world can make us feel like aliens. The manual we were given to guide us through life doesn't have any diagrams of the parts we have. I've decided to stop throwing away my parts and start throwing away this useless manual to write my own. So kick off your shoes, have a seat, and take a break from fitting yourself into a mold that's not your shape. You belong here. Allies, welcome to the ADHD planet. ADHDers, welcome home. Hello, hello everybody. Abby here, back for another episode. Happy April. It is April 1st, and I do not intend to pull any April Fool's Day pranks on you. I am here for 100% sincerity, and I will prove it to you. So today, I want to talk about something kind of heavy, but I'm going to try to make it short so as it's not too overwhelming, maybe, and because it's pretty big, and I'm sure we will come back to it later, and actually we kind of already have talked about it for some time. Let me start by telling you about an experience that I've had multiple times over the past couple weeks. I am talking to a person who is neurodivergent, ADHD, autism, both, that kind of thing. Usually a woman, and they are very, kind of escalated about something. Either they're very upset, they're very angry, they're very hurt or reactive, and once or twice I have been that woman, and then either I or, you know, who I was talking to, says, "You're not crazy. You're not making this up. Yeah, I think you're right. I totally see that." And then those people, including myself, burst into tears upon hearing that they are not crazy. And this has happened to me so many times recently that I'm feeling that these people, myself included, really need something explicit talking about this feeling that just seems so incredibly widespread. How is it that this can happen multiple times? How is it that, you know, that when I hear "you're not crazy," I want to burst into tears? And how is it possible that so many other people, so many other neurodivergent women, hear that phrase and also just melt? I mean, what's happening here? And it just made me wonder, who did this to us? You know? And where is this coming from? Where are we receiving the message that we're making things up, that we're overreacting, that we're being unreasonable, that our perception of things is not reality? Where's that coming from? And so wondering that has led me to think more about gaslighting. And because we'll go over exactly what I mean by that in a second. But it's what came to my mind when I think about reasons why someone might doubt their reality. And I think this just needs to be the start of a big conversation about the ways that neurodivergent people, but often women, are taught to doubt their own perceptions and their own natural reactions, and where that's coming from, what is the bigger picture that it's a part of, and if this is happening to all of us, I mean, it has to be something that is so insidious and so ingrained that it would be hard to separate from, you know, everyday life. You know, I've had this experience with with people who have had really traumatic childhoods, as well as people who've had really happy, healthy, stable childhoods. You know, I get this reaction from people across all ends of the spectrum. And so I just think it needs to be looked at more closely. So let's first talk about, what do I mean when I say gaslighting? What is that? So many of you will probably know what I mean when I say that, and I think it is, and partly because I do think that it is a word that's thrown around in neurodivergent communities specifically a great deal. But for those of you who are unfamiliar, it is a term for, it's actually a term, like, originally what it means is it's a technique of psychological manipulation that's typically part of emotional abuse. And the point is to gradually undermine someone's confidence in their own ability to distinguish truth from a lie, or right from wrong, or reality from appearance. And the term actually comes from a play and a movie called Gaslight from the 30s and 40s. And in that story, a husband gradually convinces his wife that she's losing her mind and imagining things. Like, for example, he will, like, dim or flicker the gas lights in their home, and when she points it out, he'll say that she's imagining it and he didn't see that. So that's where the term comes from. And we often see it discussed, you know, like I said, in abuse contexts. And because of that, we often hear it referred to as basically an intentional move, right? Like it's an intentional decision on someone's part to make someone else doubt themselves in order to maintain power and control over that person, and to make them more dependent on the abuser for, you know, interpreting reality and their own internal experiences. So that's where the context comes from, right? So now I'm going to list some descriptions of experiences or symptoms or, effects on someone's behavior. And I want you to think about if any of these might apply to you. A ton of self-doubt, like not trusting your own instincts or perceptions or your own judgment. Low self-esteem or low self-confidence. Second-guessing your memories or your recollections of things that happened. Wondering if you're remembering something correctly. Relying on others to assess if your emotions are reasonable. Codependency, or in other words, intertwining your stability and well-being with someone else's. Trouble making decisions. Fear of sharing emotions or ideas or perceptions or concerns, because you're afraid they might be invalidated or dismissed. Ignoring your own body's signals of pain or exhaustion. Or increased internalization of responsibility and blame, or over-apologizing. You know, constantly thinking that something is your fault when maybe it's actually not. So I want you to be thinking, like, do you relate to any of those? Because these are all what have been identified as long-term impacts of gaslighting. These are things that a survivor of emotional and psychological abuse might experience. So I don't know about you, but I have experienced a lot of those things. And it has made me wonder if gaslighting as we know it has to be intentional to be harmful. And, you know, in that discussion happening, especially in communities that have experienced oppression, like people who have experienced racism or sexism or ableism or homophobia, etc. There's interesting conversations going on about, well, do you have to mean it to gaslight somebody? Because I think we're gradually realizing that these descriptors of long-term effects of gaslighting are much more widespread than I think we previously thought. And I think it's indicative of a much bigger problem. So essentially, the answer to the question, does gaslighting have to be intentional? Or like, does something, you know, if there are things that are making you doubt your reality, if it's not intentional, if they're done by very well-meaning people, is that considered gaslighting? And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But in my experience, it's the only thing that has come close to reflecting what I have seen and what I have heard. And so if there is another word for people unintentionally doubting someone else's senses or sanity, then I would like to hear it. I just haven't found a term that I like yet. So I thought I would go over today about where are these messages coming from? Like I said at the beginning, right? Where are we getting these messages that I'm crazy, I'm overreacting, my emotions and my reactions are not reasonable, and that they're, you know, I need to be checked, or I need to be reined in, or, you know, no one's gonna believe me. So I've kind of formed a list of the ways in which we, as a society, and as loved ones, unintentionally gaslight neurodivergent people. The first few things that came to my mind were things regarding our sensory sensitivities, right? So things that, especially when we're children, you know, we're still figuring out the world and our parents are trying to help us make sense of it. And so things that that maybe some parents or other loved ones might say to neurodivergent people would be things like, oh, it's not that loud. It's not that loud in here. It's not, that food isn't very spicy. That can't hurt that badly. It's not that bad. Or that clothing isn't that tight, you know, all those not that statements. Or things around food, like you can't leave the table until you've finished your dinner. Or you've had enough, you know, you're not hungry anymore, you've had enough to eat, things like that. So like little things that maybe some people might mean as comforting, like, don't be scared, this isn't that bad, and you're gonna be all right, but can, over time, start to teach us, that our experience of the world is just a little off, and it's not quite right, you know, and one thing that really comes to my mind when it comes to this is I've been reading lately a lot of experiences from, in particular, autistic people who have had a lot of instances where they've been experiencing, you know, chronic pain or severe physical health problems, and have either tried to get the medical help they needed and were denied, you know, because of a lot of these things of others just not seeing our perception of stimuli as valid, or our perception of pain as valid, or because so much of our time has been spent kind of unlearning our own pain signals, right? Of like, oh, well, this concert feels so loud to me, my ears are literally hurting. And then, you know, and over time when people keep saying like, oh, it's not that loud, you know, you're making a big deal out of nothing. And, I think eventually we start to believe that. And so, this is kind of a side note, but I do have a lot of thoughts about, a lot of the various health problems that are associated with, various neurodivergent conditions. But, especially when I consider things like Dr. Russell Barkley's study about how ADHD symptoms shorten people's lifespans. That was a pretty big deal study that came out recently, and I have a lot of feelings about it that we could talk about later, but considering, like, the impacts of, like, unintentional gaslighting and, in the context of the many, like, various health problems we might struggle with, like, eating disorders, like, what people might call, like, unhealthy or unsafe practices, right? Like, smoking or, even like neglecting medical care is considered to be like possibly a symptom of ADHD that can shorten your lifespan. So I just wonder, I think about like the bigger picture of the many ways that we're taught to just kind of deny our own experiences and to view our lives not through our own lens but through a neurotypical lens. And I just think there's a lot more to explore there than just simple correlations of like, you know, people with ADHD tend to have these problems and maybe it's for these reasons, you know, like I just think it's a much, much bigger than that. It makes me think about like, what if the culture were different, like what if our experiences were validated more often throughout our lives and growing up. And I wonder if that would have an impact on the many health problems that we experience. So I just think there's a lot to unpack here about the impact of gaslighting and how it is on our physical health as well. That's all to say that. And how maybe unintentionally gaslighting someone's sensory sensitivities could perhaps lead to pretty severe consequences of what we're teaching people about how to take care of their health and how to notice their own signals and how to be in tune with their body and to learn what their body needs. So it's just thoughts there. But other ways that we might unintentionally gaslight neurodivergent people is definitely with emotions. That's something I hear a ton, again, especially with women, neurodivergent women. You know, things like, this isn't a big deal, or you're overreacting, being dramatic, you're fine, you're too sensitive, you're just trying to get attention, you know, you're blowing this out of proportion, or things like you're overwhelming or you're overbearing, you know, or too much, you're too much for people, you know. So those are some ways that, you know, over time that really makes us doubt our own emotions. I mean, I consider myself a fairly well-adjusted person, but I definitely still have moments when I feel very strong emotional reactions and I find myself reaching out to other people to kind of fact check it for me, you know, and be like, I feel this a lot, and is this right? Like, is there something else going on here that is maybe making me overreact? Or so I find that I often you know, reach out for validation, because I didn't really ever learn to validate my own feelings. And I did never learn that, you know, my feelings, even if, you know, they were bigger than other people wanted them to be, didn't mean that they were less real, and didn't mean that I had no right to feel that way, you know? And over time, you know, that really, for one, it does almost get internalized of, like, that it just becomes that constant second voice of, like, there's that initial emotional reaction, and then there's that voice that follows immediately after that goes, like, oh, but this is not a big deal. Or this is, like, you know, I shouldn't be upset about this because they didn't mean to hurt me. You know, things like that. And so that can really do a number on our own self-talk. It can also really impact our relationships. And I think this is perhaps one reason, one of many reasons, why people who are neurodivergent have a higher rate of being in unhealthy or abusive relationships. I mean, because if you're already saying that to yourself, if you're already constantly doubting your feelings when it comes to how other people's actions affect you, then that's going to feel a lot more natural if it's actually coming at you from another person. So that's one thing that comes to mind. And then, of course, just the last part of, like, unintentional gaslighting, I think, and this really rings true for me in particular, is the language that we use around executive tasks and various forms of executive function, and how a lot of the ways that maybe some people view as encouraging or promoting self-reliance could actually be very invalidating and dismissive of things that are in actuality harder for us. You know, I talk about this a lot, you know, that how it's a very new realization for me that, oh, like, neurotypical people told me this was easy because it feels easy to them. and how that's always been, always felt like news to me, you know? So, like, some ways that we might unintentionally gaslight people in terms of their executive dysfunction might be phrases like, oh, this shouldn't be this hard. You're making this harder than it has to be. Or you can do this if you just try hard enough. If you can do X, you should be able to do Y. Or you're overthinking this. You're wasting your time, or you're not spending your time wisely. Or you're taking too long. I even sometimes think that, like, time-limited exams are, like, this almost part of this unintentional gaslighting, because it's like you give a certain amount of time for someone to complete this task without really acknowledging that some people might take longer. Like, this might be harder for some people to do for whatever reason. They get distracted, they, you know, they need breaks, they read slowly, you know, like, for any billion number of reasons. And the fact that and speaking from an American perspective, but the fact that this is so common that, like, and I don't know, I mean, I understand that, like, individually tailoring every test could get unruly, but it's just a symbol of, like, this bigger cultural message that there is a right amount of time to be spending on this. You know what I mean? Like, this is the right amount of time it should take you to complete this test. And if you take longer, there's something wrong with you. Or you're doing something wrong. So, yeah. So it's just one of those thoughts about, like, there's just a billion tiny ways that we don't intend to discredit people's experiences, but it ends up turning into that, right? Another way we might unintentionally dismiss someone is by saying you can do this on your own, when someone is asking you for help. And that could be intended as like an encouraging, I believe in you kind of statement, but that person is asking you for help. I mean, that's not easy. And I just find that there's often this belief that there's such thing as giving someone too much help, you know? And I don't feel like that's possible. Like, if I think, especially if a young person is asking somebody for help, I think that there's just that alone is a skill that they're learning and they're practicing, you know? So, I mean, I definitely think that there's probably more, I don't want to say helpful, but more useful ways to help than others, you know, for example, like guiding someone instead of doing it for them. I mean, I'm sure that's probably, there's probably a better way to help than others, but ultimately, especially for neurodivergent people, what you're saying to them is you shouldn't need help, and the fact that you feel that you need it is wrong. And there's that thing inside you that perks up when you're stuck, and that, like, that little alarm inside you that rings when you've done all you can do on your own, that's wrong, and you need to snooze that alarm, you need to keep going. And I think over time that really doesn't do us justice. And while it is intended to build our confidence and build our independence, what it actually does is weakens it. It weakens our self-reliance because we can't rely on our own alarms, right? So those are just some examples of things that maybe you're saying or you're hearing that could perhaps not be intended to dismiss and invalidate and make you doubt your reality and your perceptions and your memories. That might not be intended to do that, but they could have really long-lasting impact on someone with neurodivergence, especially. So, all that to say that this is something that I've been working very intentionally on. You know, for example, with clients, in my career, I've worked with several clients. Obviously, the majority of them are neurodivergent. And also the majority of them had addictions in their past. And so it can, if you're working with people in recovery, in my experience, dishonesty can be something that professionals are always on alert for when they're working with that population. And you know, just having spoken to people with addictions, I know that that dishonesty is something that you know, they felt forced to use in order to, you know, maintain their addictions. And it's something that I very frequently see in people in recovery, that effort to work against dishonesty and to unlearn that. So it's a thing, but sometimes I get this impression, or other professionals react to me and how I act with clients as like naive. And, you know, kind of unfamiliar with the, with the particulars of working with clients who've had addictions, right? Like I sometimes get reactions like that. And so I feel like it's important to really identify where I'm coming from when I, in terms of how I show up for clients. And like, so my overall philosophy, what I'm trying to convey, with anyone that I'm working with is I just believe them. I believe them without question. And part of that is, you know, that, obviously like therapeutic safety that I think most, therapists try to provide for their clients. I think that's part of it. But for me, it's very intentional and perhaps like, over the top, about how much trust I put in them, just because I know how many years they've spent listening to messages that, you know, they can't trust themselves. And so if I don't trust them, why should they trust themselves? Right. So yeah, so this whole, like, you know, the context of gaslighting in the neurodivergent community is why this is important to me. And this is an important part of how I do therapy. It's important to me that my clients always know that I am not looking for or expecting dishonesty from them. So if they tell me that they're sober, I believe them. And you say that your UA was a false positive for drugs? Sure, I believe you. I wonder what happened. Let's get to the bottom of it. You know, if your diagnosis doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel like it fits you, sure, then it's gone. You know, so it's just one of those things that I think is a choice that I've made that maybe not everyone does or feels like they have to. And I do want to clarify that, like, this, if unintentional gaslighting is what we're calling it, is not something I'm immune to, right? Like, even as a neurodivergent person who has experienced the harm of these statements, I still find myself making them, you know, very, not without even thinking about it, you know, like, someone saying like, oh, it's freezing in here, and me being like, what? It's not that cold. So I do understand how deeply ingrained this is, and that's why I think it's there's something going on that's much bigger than just people making intentional choices to make people feel crazy, you know? So anyway, in sum, the message that the whole spirit of this episode is that I want to convey this message specifically. And I think it's to all neurodivergent people, but especially neurodivergent people of marginalized genders. I really want you to hear this. And what I want you to hear is that I believe you. You are not crazy. You're not attention seeking. You're not making this up. Your feelings are real and valid and reasonable. And I trust implicitly your interpretation and perception of what you're experiencing in your own body and your own mind. You're right. You're right. So, that's enough about that. Feel free to let me know what you think. I think that this is just one small piece of a very, very big conversation that we need to all be having, and we are all having. So always love to hear your feedback on this. You know, what are the ways that you feel you've been taught to ignore or misinterpret your own feelings and experiences, either intentionally or unintentionally? How are you learning to trust yourself again? How are you healing? Or what else have you noticed about the ways we unintentionally undermine each other? So, thank you so much for listening. I love you all very dearly, and I value your thoughts and feedback and experiences so highly. So thank you for spending this time with me today, and take care of yourself. Have fun. Go watch an episode of Bob's Burgers or whatever silly, fun, wholesome thing you use to comfort yourself. Okay, bye. That's all for this episode, but there is plenty more at my website, theadhdmanual.com. That's theadhdmanual.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit at theadhdmanual. Do you have a question, comment, or story? Then I want to hear it. Email me at theadhdmanual@gmail.com. Very special thank you to my brother, Joe Miner, for composing this theme music, and thank you so much for listening. And remember to be kind to yourself. See you next time.